All right, it's not the best college football Saturday. Next weekend's insane. Right, Denton? Next weekend is Oregon-Ohio State.
Yeah, next weekend is, as we like to call it, that's crack. Oregon-Ohio State.
Yeah.
You get Ole Miss LSU next weekend, too, I believe. Like, there are some matchups on the slate next weekend when you're like, oh, I'm sitting on the couch for the entire day.
Oregon State, Ohio State, Oregon next week, Penn State, USC next week, Texas, Oklahoma next week, like you said, Ole Miss, LSU next week, Tennessee, Florida, for whatever that's worth. K-State at Colorado, big games next week. This week, not so much, but we're pulling in Denton from up north in Maine, where he's off on a nice little vacation for a few days with his fiance. So what do we got this weekend? I mean, I actually am interested in a game tonight. I don't know if you're interested in Syracuse UNLV at all, but that UNLV quarterback that was the replacement was pretty good last week.
Yeah, I think we got two good games tonight. You know, UNLV and Syracuse have really, like, dominated the Friday slate, which I don't mind. You know, they've each had a couple of big wins on Fridays, and then you get Michigan State and Oregon as well, and, you know, finally getting to see Oregon up against slightly better competition than what we've seen them for the beginning portion of the season. I still have some questions about their offensive execution because they're doing this thing where they're racking up a ton of yards. They're just not finding the end zone. So get to see those two, both at 9-2, by the way, so like later kicks. So if you're a fan of high school football, you can go watch a high school football game, and then by the time you're back, you're really not missing any of the college football, which that to me is like perfect to somebody that likes high school football and college football. But I'm really curious to see if what UNLV did last week minus their quarterback with the new guy filling in, if that is going to be the reality of what they are without Sluka, or if, you know, this new quarterback was kind of just a flash in the pan, using a little bit of that momentum of us versus the world kind of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, remember last week, the story of the college football world was the UNLV quarterback, Sluka, basically leaving school, claiming that he did not get his NIL money. It was a bad look for everybody. It was a bad look for the kid, bad look for the school, bad look for the NCAA. The guy that came in and replaced him had a big day, and they routed Fresno State 59-14 to remain undefeated. Just so everybody understands, Fresno actually played Michigan pretty tough in the opener, and UNLV is one of those teams right now that is in the mix for that playoff spot for the non-Power Four. Now, they've got a massive game later in the season against Boise State. But, all right, let's move to Saturday. What do you got?
So I think the most compelling game is Missouri on the road against Texas A&M. A&M's a short favorite. They're ranked 25. Yep. Missouri's in the top 10. You know, Missouri's one of the teams, as we get to this point in the season, Kevin, where I feel like we start to have a good idea of which teams are really, really good and which teams maybe were ranked a little too highly at the start of the season, Missouri still feels like a big question mark because they have one of the best offensive players in the nation in Luther Burden III. But everywhere else, you kind of look at them and say, I was expecting more. You know, Brady Cook had a really good season last year, a quarterback for them, but you watch him now and you're like, I'm expecting a little bit more production here. It feels like they've been skating by teams where they should have been blowing them out, or the expectation is that they'd be blowing them out. So the fact that they're now underdogs on the road in a tough environment to play in Kyle Field, Texas A&M, that one is going to be really, really intriguing to me. Like, is Missouri what we hope they're going to be, or was last year kind of just an outlier of what that program is? Because, you know, I don't know if they are a team in the SEC that can afford multiple losses and still get into the college football playoffs. So this weekend is a massive, massive game for them. I don't know where the public has fallen on that game in particular. So I guess I would pose that question to you. Is our public on Texas A&M? Are they on Missouri? But
I'm pulling it up. It was not a game that made my list because it wasn't It wasn't overwhelming, but let me just pull up a thing. But what I was going to ask you is, has Reed, the quarterback that came in for the kid, Wagman, has he been any better for A&M?
Yes and no. I mean, they're winning, but like Texas A&M does not have a quarterback, whether it's either of those two guys, that is going to jump off the stat sheet at you. Like in this era where you got guys like Jackson Dart every week except for last week, you know, putting up these crazy numbers. That's not really what Texas A&M is, but they've been a pretty good defensive team, and the quarterbacks have been doing just enough to come away with some, like, comfortable wins, and a couple short ones, but some comfortable wins. So I don't know if he's that much more of a difference maker, whether it be him or Wegman, at least from a statistical standpoint.
Yeah, there's more Missouri action, by the way, but it's not, like, super overwhelming. But there's definitely more Missouri public action in this game, with A&M favored as the 25th-ranked team in the country against the undefeated 9th-ranked team. All right, go ahead. What else do we have to look forward to tomorrow?
I really was hoping that, like, Washington and Michigan was going to be a good game, and maybe it ends up being a good game because, as you know and I know, Michigan still is not great at throwing the ball forward. But their defense has looked really good over the past couple of weeks, and that was what we expected that they were going to be this weekend. The run game has looked really good. You know, it's funny. Donovan Edwards is the guy that made, like, the video game cover, but it sure seems like Khalil Mullings is the running back one there. And he's been really, really good. He was really, really good last week. I actually had him on the show last week. Great interview as well. So I'm expecting Michigan to run the ball down the throat of Washington. I was hoping, and I think when that game was scheduled, the expectation is that that was going to be like this is a main event. Like, you want to watch this at 7 p.m., 7:30, whenever it kicks off on Saturday. And now we're sitting here like, nobody really likes Michigan that much. And, you know, Washington's in this phase of transition. So that was supposed to be the big game of the weekend. And I think for most people, you're going to look at it and say, can't wait for next weekend.
Denton, by the way, the host of College Football Overtime on Sirius XM Friday nights and Saturday nights. Do you give Arkansas a chance Saturday night to hang in there against Tennessee? I think I do.
Hang in there, yes. I don't know. What is the line for that? Is it double digits in favor of Tennessee?
It's 13.5. This is going to be probably an Arkansas play coming up for me.
Yeah, I would say I would give them a real good chance to hang in. Probably cover the number, because that 13.5 is a pretty big number. But it feels like a game where they're close. And then the fourth quarter comes and Tennessee slowly pulls away and they win by like 10 or 12. I really like Tennessee this year. Like, I'm excited to see them go against teams that are actually good or that can actually hang with them a little bit, just to kind of see what they're like. I mean, that game against Oklahoma a couple weeks ago, that was a fun one. But I really want to see what's going to happen when they ask Nico Wye, this hotshot quarterback. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen when they ask him to actually go win a game. Like, hey, we need you on a really big drive. Go out there and make that drive happen. Because as fun as the game against Oklahoma was, and I think the score showed it a lot closer than it actually was, they had a pretty good advantage in the fact that Oklahoma had two quarterbacks that could not throw the ball. So I'm excited to see what Tennessee can do when they start to get pushed around. Hopefully Arkansas does that.
It's interesting to look at Arkansas, Denton. They have two very close losses, and in both games they had fourth quarter leads against Oklahoma State on the road earlier in the season and A&M last week. They lost 21-17. In those games, they're -5 in the turnover margin, and yet they could have won both of those games.
Yeah.
And so I know they haven't beaten anybody. They beat Auburn on the road. That doesn't mean much. They beat Trent Dilfer's team, UAB. That doesn't mean much. But I think at home on a Saturday night, that's an underrated college football atmosphere when they're decent. It's too bad they didn't win last week, because they probably would have been close to being ranked. But I kind of like their chances. What else? Because I think there's a late night game that's interesting. But what do you have before we get there?
Well, I will say one final thing on Arkansas. That their quarterback is a lot of fun. You know, there's a couple of quarterbacks in the SEC with Talen Green, Arkansas, and Diego Pavia at Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
that are good Pavia enough to keep teams that are not great in games where they have really no rhyme or reason to hang around in. So I think he is enough fun to, at least if you're not loving the game, if you're not playing the game, to at least turn it on for a little bit just to kind of see what he is.
By the way, did KJ Jefferson's at UCF, right?
Yeah, shoot, boy, they got shredded last week. But yeah,
I know.
UCF with Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, because I actually thought that he was – I think if they had him at Arkansas right now, that they'd be in better shape. But anyway, go ahead. What else?
Well, I know Penn State's in action. You'll have to help me a little bit, because I don't have the schedule up right in front of me, because I'm driving through not the boondocks of Maine, but like the coast of Maine. But Penn State's in action this week. I was bummed last week with how Drew Aller played. You know, I thought their running game looked really strong, and we know they have a really good running attack, but we've been asking Drew Aller, like, hey, go out there and throw to win a game. And I get that if you don't need to throw to win a game and you can do it running, like, do it running. But I think Illinois is a good team. Not a great team, but a good team. I would have loved to see him have a really strong performance last week, and it feels like we didn't get that. So I want to see him throw and put up some impressive numbers to justify all of the hype that's been around him for what feels like almost 2 years now.
Look, this right now, to me, last week was a chance to really make an early season statement. They won the game 21-7, and it was, you know, they didn't cover, which was unfortunate for me, but they certainly had chances to cover. Illinois scored early, and that was, you know, basically it. They play UCLA. UCLA cannot score. You know, they're not being...
Yeah, I wonder why that is.
They're not being inspired by their new offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy. But Penn State is a 28-point favorite in a noon start in Happy Valley against UCLA. That just seems like a one-sided beatdown. I think it does. I give Iowa's defense a chance against Ohio State, not to win the game, but to kind of hang in there. I think Vanderbilt, like we've talked about, Pavi is really good. And with Alabama coming off that emotional win over Georgia, that would be a spot, I think, tomorrow for Vandy to play. Big Vandy, you know, lost a heartbreaker last week in overtime to Missouri. Their kicker shanked a kick that would have forced another overtime. And then I've got one for you. First of all, Michigan, Washington. You know, Washington is favored over Michigan on Saturday night.
That's crazy. That's so nuts.
Yeah. Michigan, for you know this. Michigan in wins over USC and Minnesota, okay? In their win over USC, they threw for 32 yards in the air. 32. Last week, they really stepped it up in their win over Minnesota. 86 passing yards. They cannot throw the forward pass with Alex Orji. They can run the football. They cannot throw the football. I bet you they have to throw it against Washington. I think Washington wins big.
They're going to have to. You know, real quickly about Iowa and Ohio State, that might be another sneaky game. You know, Ohio State is very similar to what I thought Ole Miss was, in that they look really good against teams that they're supposed to smash. But what happens when you play a team that not maybe doesn't have your number per se, but is at least in a equal territory when it comes to talent? Because like Ole Miss for the first couple of weeks with Jackson Dart, you're getting all these graphics about how he's on a faster start than Joe Burrow when he won a Heisman,
right?
Or Mac Jones the first four games. And you know, really, Kevin, if you look back at that Mac Jones year, because it was COVID and you weren't playing the non-conference games, you're only playing SEC teams. Like Mac Jones was shredding guys in the SEC, and Jackson Dart's putting these massive numbers up, and then you play a team in Kentucky, and he gets absolutely punched in the mouth, and then repeatedly punched in the mouth. I don't think that's going to happen with Ohio State's offense. I think they're much more balanced. But going up against a team like Iowa, we're going to finally get to see what this Will Howard-led Ohio State team looks like, because the first couple, like, with all due respect to Michigan State, you're not really getting – that's not a litmus test. Like, you're supposed to crush Michigan State the way that they did. So I'm curious to see what he is going to look like and what that offense is going to look like, to see if they continue rolling. Because if Ohio State, if Will Howard looks monumentally better than what Kyle McCord did last year, they should be the favorite to win the national championship.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think we saw a game Saturday night that was one for the ages, with both teams having a chance. And by the way, the guy that we don't love stepping up and having a massive fourth quarter, which, you know, may spark him, Carson Beck. But I have a question for you. Like, last week, Ole Miss lost to Kentucky at home. All right, they lost at home. And Kentucky, Stoops, by the way, is one of the most underrated defensive coaches of our time in college football. How did they lose to South Carolina? But that's beside the point. My question for you is, Ole Miss lost last week to Kentucky. Missouri's got Texas A&M. Who's more likely to overcome that one loss and make a playoff? Ole Miss or Missouri if Missouri loses in College Station?
If Ole Miss only has one loss, I would say them because they have LSU. They're going to play South Carolina. I think Georgia is on their schedule, and I believe they play Texas A&M as well at some point. So the
they don't play Texas schedule. A&M. They play at LSU. They play Oklahoma at home. They play Georgia at home. They have games against Arkansas and Florida as well.
Right, so not Texas A&M, but Oklahoma. So maybe that Oklahoma game looks a little worse now. Oklahoma has
Missouri has to go to Tuscaloosa, and they get Oklahoma at home, but they go to Alabama. See, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, and he's like, "Well, Ole Miss would be the higher ranked team. Ole Miss is a higher profile team." I'm like, "Look, Missouri's got the biggest opportunity." And that would be in Tuscaloosa to, by the way, play well and lose and potentially still have a shot. I think you're probably right. It's probably Ole Miss. But it's funny because Ole Miss's loss would be to Kentucky and Missouri's loss would be to a ranked team on the road.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Kentucky finishes the year. I think Kentucky can make or break that conversation. If they beat Ole Miss, which they did, and then they like fall apart towards the end of the year, and you're saying, well, like, yeah, at the time that was a tough loss, but like, look at what they are now. There is a lifeline, if you will, for the committee to be like, yeah, I don't know that we trust that as a good loss, so we're gonna go with Missouri. But I do think the thing that Ole Miss has in their back pocket is a quarterback, and I think when it comes to the 12 team. College football playoff, that there are going to be people that say, well, we like a quarterback and we like a certain offense better. So if it comes down to each of these teams have a good resume, like let's just say hypothetically.
You don't like Brady Cook. You're not a Brady Cook guy.
I'm not. I'm a Luther Burden guy for sure.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I'm not even that much of a Jackson Dart guy. But I think his perception nationally is a little greater than Brady Cook. So I think that might be something that's in the favor of Ole Miss when it comes to those discussions if they end up having a very similar resume.
I like Brady Cook, and I think he's a big-time clutch performer. All right, the last game I was just going to mention is where game day is. I mean, they're in Berkeley for this big ACC matchup between Miami and Cal. Look, Miami basically saved, in many ways kind of saved their season last week we didn't even talk about this on Monday's show. Virginia Tech got screwed last Friday night. That was my take on it. That was not a play that was conclusive based on video replay. Even if your gut tells you that that was not a catch, they called it a catch. They took 15 minutes to look at it, which by definition means it's not conclusive. And they overturned it anyway. I thought that was horrible. We didn't talk about this Monday. What did you think?
I hated the way that they went about that. If they would have, because they made the call, right? And they, like you mentioned, they did the replay bit. And then they just said, we're overturning it, game over. And then ESPN cut to boxing. I was like, give us a reason why. Because they ultimately did on Twitter. And the reason that they gave was the reason that I thought it was going to be overturned, which is that the ball touched a Miami player when he was out of bounds, therefore the play is dead. But they didn't give us that reasoning until, 12, 14 hours later. So I understand why Virginia Tech fans would be furious about that. I ultimately do think it was the right call, but the officiating has to be better, and you have to be more clear about that to let them know this is what we are seeing, this is why the call was made. Because the way they went about it was awful. But you're 100% right in that kind of saved at least the beginning portion of Miami's season, because if they lose that game to a team in Virginia Tech that obviously, as you know, I had
your guy played well. Drones played really well in that game.
Really well, but like that was a game that Miami had to win. So the fact that it was even that close was a tad bit alarming, because I thought Cam Ward played really well, and then you got to see some of the downsides, which we hadn't seen with him in Miami, that it's not all sunshines and rainbows.
I give Cal a shot. On Saturday night, late Saturday night, in Berkeley. I think Cal's played really well so far. They lost to Florida State last week, which is painful. But they were 3-0 going into that game. They went to Auburn and won before we knew what Auburn was. I actually think that'll be a fired up, environment, and not an easy one for Cam Ward, although he's been great. All right, I got to run. Did you have anything else?
I can't wait for that environment, just because I've never seen a pumped-up Cal crowd before. So seeing what they're going to be like with game day there should be a lot of fun. That's not
when,
like a
when Tedford was there, they had some good teams, and it was important out there for them. I always felt like their environment was much better than Stanford's environment when Stanford was good.
But, yeah, I would agree with that, but I mean, God, Stanford was so much fun when Andrew Luck was there just to watch them late. I mean, they were the definition of Pac-12 after dark.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
All right, see ya.
Denton Day, everybody, on this upcoming college football weekend. When we come back, I've got my smell test. Sorry, there are some college picks included. That's next. All right, I am going to wait to do the smell test because we got a guest coming up at 11:35, so I'm going to do it next hour. But I did want to play, before we get Scott Petrak on from Cleveland to talk about the Browns, I did want to play some of the sound yesterday from the two coordinators. Yesterday was coordinator day. And I thought Joe Witt Jr. said something that was really interesting. And it was sort of, it was an admission of sorts, which you typically don't see from coaches. They'll just kind of keep it close to the vest in terms of what they did. But he was asked about, you know, why the improvement Sunday against Arizona, why was the communication better? Here's what he said.
The communication was outstanding. I mean, we had, we cut the miss assignments down a ton. One thing we did coaching-wise is we streamlined the call. So we narrowed the call sheet down some. You know, maybe I was trying to do too much. And so I was like, okay, let's just make sure these guys can set their feet and go play fast. And let's not be cute with anything. Let's just play fast. And that's what we did. And the communication was outstanding with the guys. And then they went and played. They hit and they ran. It's the way it's supposed to look.
How about that? How about the fact that he talked about they narrowed down the call sheet, the play sheet. Maybe I was trying to do too much. Want my guys to play fast. Let's not be cute with anything. Interesting, right? I mean, you know, also I would expect against a Cleveland team that is not much of a threat offensively, especially through the air, I would expect, you know, not to be that cute either. You got to figure out how to stop the run. And he did talk about some of those things. But I thought that was an interesting admission from, remember, a first-time defensive coordinator calling signals. This has been an adjustment for him. It's been an adjustment for a team defensively with a lot of new players. You got to give it time. It's been not very pretty to watch through four games, but last week was a step forward with the exception, I think, of their run defense. But that was Joe Witt Jr., the defensive coordinator, saying, you know, we streamed it down a little bit. I was trying to do too much. Cliff Kingsbury. So there's been this emphasis on less classroom time and more walkthroughs. To kind of go through game plans, which is a change for him. This is what he said when he was asked about it.
I just look at it, you know, try to get better every day. So I really have focused this year on the output, not the outcome. You know, I think I got the other way in Arizona at times, and it's like you can do what you can do. You put in the work, and you show up on Sunday and try to play your best. So we'll try to get better every day, and that's been our focus. And in college, I just got to a point coaching at Texas Tech where the guys would lose interest. You kept them in the meetings too long. So I like to break those up and get them on the field. And in the meetings, they'll nod and say, yeah, coach, I got it. And they don't really got it. But if you get them out on the grass and you talk them through it and you walk through it, it tends to stick a little bit better.
Another interesting kind of admission from the offensive coordinator, you know, that he's changed. That at Arizona, you know, he was focused more on the outcome than the output. That at Texas Tech, you know, these long meetings. I mean, young people, and these are young people in the NFL as well. It's tough in a classroom sometimes to keep their attention. It's much better, you know, sometimes in terms of, I mean, everybody learns differently, but whether it's visually or by actually doing it, even through walkthroughs, as he says, it tends to stick a little bit better. This is an offensive coordinator that said, you got to keep evolving. You got to learn from your other opportunities. And this is a defensive coordinator who's never done this before, who learned from the first three games and said, we got to narrow narrow it down a little bit. We can't get cute, you know. I was trying to do too much. And I wonder, actually, how much input in that Dan Quinn has. Like, is this a Quinn thing going to Joe Witt Jr. and saying, you know what, we're trying to do too much. Let's make it easier. Let's let them play fast. We're trying to call too much. We've got too big of a play sheet right now. If that's something with Kingsbury where he said, you know what, I've found that, you know, the attention span in a classroom, in a room, you know, isn't in a meeting room, isn't as much as, you know, isn't as long as it is on the field. I thought those were interesting things to hear from the two coordinators yesterday. All right, I'll get to the smell test, I promise, next hour after Ben Standing. But up next, we go to Cleveland for an update on the Browns with Scott Petrick. Sunday at 1, Landover. Should be a good crowd. I don't know, and I've been trying to get some information as to whether or not the game is officially a sellout at this point. I don't think they technically sold out the Giant game, but this may be one of the first games in Landover in a long time, other than the opener last year, that is predominantly a home crowd environment. That should be fun. The Browns come to town. Scott Petrick writes for BrownZone.com, also the Chronicle Telegram in Ohio, covers the Browns. You know, I want to just start with Deshaun Watson. Like, at this point through four games, Scott, has there been any discussion about benching him and going with Jameis Winston?
Not from the team. The fans were chanting for Jameis Winston their last home game 2 weeks ago when they lost to the Giants. But the organization, they are so deep with Deshaun Watson. They need him to be good, and they can't afford to bench him. And the reality is he's played better the last 2 weeks. You know, against the Raiders, I know he hasn't thrown for 200 yards in a game, but against the Raiders, he had an 82-yard touchdown called back. He had a big drop from Amari Cooper turned into an interception. So I actually thought last week was as well as he's played this season.
Interesting. I know Dustin Hopkins missed a huge extra point, which would have put the game into a different situation there at the end when they were threatening inside the Raiders' 10-yard line. You know, one of the games after he came back in 2022 that I thought, and I don't know if you remember this, it was January 1st, Washington Yep. had to win the game in Landover to basically keep their legitimate playoff hopes alive. And I thought that was the best game I had seen Deshaun play during his comeback and may still be one of his better games since he came back. Am I right about that or not?
It was certainly his best game that he played in that six-game stretch to end 2022. He had a good second half. I think he hit Amari Cooper for three touchdowns.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the bright spot of that year. And then, you know, last season, again, he only played six games.
Right.
He finished with – he went 14 for 14 in the second half of his last game. They came back to win in Baltimore. So when you talk to people within the Browns, that's the game they point to, is the game in Baltimore before he had to go have – shoulder surgery, as this is what he can do, because, you know, completed every pass and helped lead a comeback in a hostile environment against, you know, the team that was the best in the AFC in the regular season last year.
Let's stick with offense. You know, first of all, is there any chance Chubb plays Sunday?
No.
Okay. I think Jerome Ford's a good back. Washington's really struggled against the run. What do you expect? Do you expect Stefanski and Dorsey to try to establish the run and try to run the football?
Yeah, it's so interesting. They used to be, the Browns, under Kevin Stefanski's first four seasons, were a team that was heavy run. And then this year they made offensive staff changes with the idea of becoming more spread, becoming more pass first, in order to maximize Deshaun Watson's skill set. So they don't come out and run it as often as they have in the past. Now, in their one win this year against Jacksonville, they did that. They came out, they went jumbo sets, they ran it early, and they established it, and that really helped. It takes pressure off the offensive line, it takes pressure off Watson. So we could certainly see that, given Washington's struggles against the run. But part of me thinks that the Browns know this could be a shootout, and that they're going to need to score points, and the best way to score points is to throw it around the field. And I think they think that Washington is susceptible in the pass game too. So I don't know exactly which way they're going to go, just because they haven't shown a true commitment to the run game consistently.
I'm curious, was Bill Callahan huge for them when he was there?
Yeah. I mean, if you were here and listening to Sports Talk Radio, you would hear Bill Callahan's name an awful lot. You know, the Browns loved him, thought he was the best offensive line coach in the league, leaves to go with his son. And the line has been a big problem this year. Now, injuries play a huge part of it. Jedrick Wills, their left tackle, has played 2.5 quarters. Jack Conklin, a 2-time All-Pro, is yet to play. Their center went out early last week. Wyatt Teller, their right guard, is on IR. So they have plenty of personnel issues. But they've also had confusion, and they haven't picked up every blitz. And they're struggling just overall. And I think the loss of Bill Callahan is a factor in that. I don't think it's the only thing. But they do feel his loss. I don't think there's any question about that.
I mean, take away the first game, which was, it's always kind of weird, week one, and there was a big punt return in that game, et cetera. I mean, they could have easily won any of the last three games. They lost all of them, low scoring, you know, grinded out kind of games. So before we get to Myles Garrett and that defense, just, you said you think Deshaun Watson played better than maybe he has recently. Mm-hmm. Are they ascending offensively, do you think?
I'm not ready to go that far.
Okay,
they still have,
because they're dead last pretty much in every advanced metric offensively in the league.
Yeah, and even the rudimentary ones that I understand, you know, they haven't scored 20 points in a game. They have 6 touchdowns on offense, and 3 of them are on first possessions. They scored a touchdown in the first possession each of the last 3 games, and then they go cold. They're worse in the league on third down. So, yeah, I see Deshaun Watson getting better, and you can make a correlation. Well, if your quarterback plays better, your offense feels like it could play better. And I think there's a chance if they get David Njoku back at tight end. Amari Cooper has been so up and down this year. If he hangs onto the ball, like, there is a reason to think that there's greater potential from this offense. But I'm not ready to make that leap because I just haven't seen him do it enough.
We're talking to Scott Petrick. Scott writes for BrownZone.com, the Chronicle Telegram out in Ohio. So let's flip it to the defensive side of the ball. Look, this, you know, take the playoff game out of the equation. This was one of the best defensive teams and one of the most fun defensive teams to watch last year. So what are they this year through 4 games?
Slightly above average, which isn't good enough. And, you know, you can pin most of the blame on the offense, and I do. But the defense is not without responsibility. If it played like its dominant self, then this team would have won more games. They have a couple of drives a game where they just have a stupid penalty that extends it or miss a tackle and can't get off the field. You know, Jim Schwartz, the defense coordinator, yesterday said, it feels like we need to get kicked in the teeth, and then we wake up, and it can be too late. And especially with the offense struggling, you can't put it in the kind of holes that the defense has helped put the offense in. So it needs to be better. I think they have all the talent they need. I think it's all right there for them. They just haven't put a complete game together. A couple of bad roughing the passer penalties, like I mentioned. They struggled to tackle the last couple of weeks. Martin Emerson Jr., one of the corners, hasn't played as well as he did in his first 2 years. But I think there is a chance that it all comes together, and I think that could happen at any point. And you mentioned Myles Garrett. When you have a guy like Myles Garrett, you know, he can take over a game, and we've seen him do that. And he's been dealing with injuries, and yet he still has 4 sacks and 2 forced fumbles.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I mean, he went into last week's game a little bit banged up and had 2 sacks. What is his condition coming into this game?
Yeah, we talked to him later today, and he's always kind of, I don't know, vague about injuries and what have you, but he's getting better. He's been able to, he practiced yesterday, so he only missed practice Wednesday each of the last 2 weeks. He's been able to practice Thursday. I expect him, he'll practice today. So I do think he's trending in the right direction physically, and that's huge for them, because I think it was the Giants game where he was as limited as I've seen him, yet still had a great game, and PFF graded him super high and had a ton of pressures. But I see him, I thought last week he looked way healthier to me And it showed up with a couple of sacks.
By the way, just curious, what's he like to cover?
I love him. And he's an interesting dude. He's got a lot of personality, a lot of interests, but he gives thoughtful answers. And I think there's some real depth to him as a person, and I think he's unbelievable as a player. I really enjoy covering him.
All right. So you guys are coming into a building that has not been necessarily home field friendly for this franchise in a long, long time. But there's more excitement here, Scott, than there's been probably since 2012, RG3's rookie season. So I'm curious, from a Cleveland perspective, what playing Jaden Daniels in this offense, the conversation has been, and then how you think Jim Schwartz will, you know, handle it. He's got four games of tape, whereas the other teams only had a few games of tape. Todd Bowles didn't have any. But just give me your thoughts of, you know, Washington, Daniels, and how defensively Cleveland tries to slow the offense down.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about they have all that tape, but all that tape is just him sitting back in the pocket making great throw after great throw and not getting pressured and scrambling when he needs to. So, the Browns have all the respect in the world for him. They, you know, can't believe how his completion percentage is high as is, and they say all good things. I do think they benefit from playing Lamar Jackson twice a year, and they've made those comparisons this week that there's similarities between the two. And so they have a comfort level with the quarterback with that skill set and the ability to burn you with his legs. So they know they have to keep him in the pocket, right? They have to be disciplined in their rushes, and I think that's, if not the top of the list, it's high on the list of things they have to do to combat Jaden Daniels. And I think the other part is he's looked so comfortable in the pocket that, you know, the Browns are driven by their front four. They tend to get a lot of pressure. I feel like they think that's the way they can change it and bring him back down to earth, is if they can get to him and hit him and sack him and pressure him, maybe force him to throw an interception, which he hasn't done. So that's the key for them. And it's key for every quarterback, but the Browns have the talent to get consistent pressure on him. And I think that's the recipe for, you know, them having a chance to win this game.
I talked about this earlier. I just think because you got four games and it's Jim Schwartz, who's been an outstanding coordinator. He has, in every spot he's gone, especially with young quarterbacks, he's come up with ways to confuse, you know, sometimes erring on the side of being overly aggressive. Is he viewed that way in Cleveland as he was when he got there, as he was, you know, in Philly and Tennessee and various places, or not?
Oh, yeah, he's loved here. And, I mean, he took over a bad defense with a bunch of talent. And then they were the number one defense in the league last year from a yard perspective, third down, first downs. So, yeah, I mean, people love him here. People give him all the credit in the world for flipping that defense. And, you know, he carries himself with a bravado and an edge that I think football fans like to see from their coaches.
So what do you think happens Sunday?
You know what? I'm torn. I'm picking the Commanders in a close one. Like 23-20 is my official prediction. But I feel like the Browns are better than 1-3, and I think that's going to show up at some time unexpectedly. And I wouldn't be stunned if it's this week. So I think they have a shot to pull it off. I just haven't seen enough of that offense where I feel comfortable picking them.
Just out of curiosity, if Washington wins this week and they're 1-4, I mean, I think there's been a lot of conversation about Amari Cooper, et cetera. Yeah. Do they become potential, you know, trade deadline sellers?
Yeah, I think at some point. I don't know if it happens at 1-4, but, you know, the schedule doesn't get a whole lot easier for the Browns. It's Philly, Cincinnati, Baltimore after that. So they'll know at the deadline if they're hanging around the AFC North or not. And I think it makes, if they're 2-6 or whatever that record would be, I think Amari Cooper would certainly be on the trade block, and maybe even like left tackle Jedrick Wills Jr. He's in the last year of his rookie contract and he hasn't signed an extension yet. I could see them move a couple of pieces. Now you got to be careful, right? You can't get rid of all your guys. But those are the two that come to the front of my mind.
Scott Petrick, everybody. At Scott Petrick, Petrick spelled P-E-T-R-A-K on X on Twitter. Really appreciate the information, Scott. Thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Yep. There you go. So played better last week, Deshaun Watson did, coming out of the Raiders game. Yeah, I saw that the big drop by Amari Cooper and the play that was called back as well. So they had a chance to be better offensively against a Raiders team, remember, who came into that game. The Baltimore game was two weeks earlier. They had lost to the Panthers the week before. And the Browns actually had a 10-0 lead. I think this game is a competitive game. I don't think we're going to see what we saw in Arizona last week. I think defensively they're going to play with some desperation. I'm not expecting a lot from Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson has not been obviously the same quarterback since, you know, all of this stuff personally that he went through. And by the way, he's missed a bunch of games because of injuries. I mean, you go back and you look at where he was in Houston, you know, during some of those years, the 2020 year, they didn't win that much, but he was 4,800 yards, 33 touchdowns, 7 picks. You know, over that 3-year period from 2018 through 2020, he threw 85 touchdown passes during those 3 years. He threw for over 13,000 yards during that stretch. He had a completion percentage of 69.5%. I mean, not to mention the rushing numbers as well. And then, obviously, all of the personal issues, and he's been a completely different player and an unhealthy player a lot of the time as well. I'm surprised that while fans there are calling for Jameis Winston, I guess I'm not surprised when you think it. When you think about what the investment they made in him, they can't bail after what would be he coming into this season. He had 12 total starts in 2 years for Cleveland because of suspension and then because of injury. He's got 4 starts this year. So he started 4 games. They got to roll with it. I think Kevin Stefanski is a good offensive mind. I think their game plan has to be this week. You know, he mentioned that they've gotten away from being, you know, run heavy. I think it's got to be run heavy this week with the quarterback included in the run game. I think you're going to see a lot of Jerome Ford. I think you're going to see a lot of Dante Foreman. And I think you're going to see a lot of Deshaun Watson running the football. Hopefully Washington can do a better job stopping the run on Sunday. All right, so coming up shortly, Ben Standing will have an update on, you know, the injury piece because, man, the injury report was long yesterday. You know, not practicing, Noah Brown, Brian Robinson Jr., limited, Allegretti, Butler, Farrell still, Tyler Owens. Couple of players back, including Eckler, was a full go yesterday. But coming off that concussion, running back will be interesting to see, you know, whether or not there's any chance they go into this game without Brian Robinson Jr. and with Eckler maybe not completely. Look, when it's a concussion, he's got to be cleared or not cleared. And he's been cleared, obviously, to work. Cleveland's injury list is really long as well. All right, we'll get Ben's thoughts coming up next. Smell test next hour. Browns Washington prediction will go around the NFL as well. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. We're on the Team 980, the team980.com. We are also free and clear on the Odyssey app.